to Julie Bowl, the podcast about that song you know but know nothing about. I'm Emily.
I'm Jamie.
Each week we will break down a topic from Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire. We will take turns being the expert each week as we dive into these people, events, etc. Disclaimer, if you are already a history buff, this podcast isn't for you. If you're a sweet dum-dum just like us and want to know a little more, you're in the right place. This week's topic is Walter Winchell.
Walter Winchell.
Walter Winchell. Do you know anything about Walter Winchell?
He has an alliterative name.
He does have an alliterative name. He does. Walter Winchell.
Was he English?
Okay, or? That's so weird. I thought he was British too.
Oh.
But he's not.
Oh, okay.
He's American.
So I know nothing.
It's okay. I started recently. I'm like, oh yeah, this guy's British. No. Mm-mm. Walter Winchell was in fact born on April 7th, 1897 in New York City, which is also my birthday, which is the second time my birthday has come up on this podcast.
It's a good day.
Yeah, me, Walter Winchell, and Dulles, right?
Yep.
Who, I don't know if he was a great dude, but... Let's talk about Walter. So he was the son of Russian Jewish immigrants, Jeannie and Jacob. He left school after sixth grade and started performing with a vaudeville group that was known as the Newsboys Sextet.
Okay.
Which I think means there's six of them.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Sextet's a weird word. Sorry.
Choices.
Choices. He started his career in journalism by posting notes about his acting group on, like, bulletin boards and theaters and stuff like that. So, Walter Winchell, as you might have guessed, he's a journalist. That's what we're going to get into. Okay. In 1929, so he was about 30 years old, he started working for the New York Daily Mirror, where he became a gossip columnist for a column titled On Broadway.
Okay.
Sure.
Dun, 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 dun.
I don't know if it was necessarily about people in Broadway productions. It was just like, I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't find exact examples of that article. I tried to find, like, famous publications of his, and I couldn't find very many. He was more so known for his radio broadcasting, and his debut on radio came over a CBS affiliate, WABC, in New York, on May 20th, 1930. The show was titled Sax on Broadway and was a 15-minute feature about business news and, I guess, Broadway. So maybe it was about Broadway. People
Broadway
and musicals.
Broadway and business?
I guess.
Like, good mashup?
Sure. So he opened his broadcast by pushing at random on a telegraph key. Hmm. So it made this... I'll play the audio of it, but it sounds like beep 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 beep. To kind of create this sense of, like, urgency and drama.
Yeah.
And he used the catchphrase, "Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea, let's go to press." When you hear him say it, you'll be able to, like, not even tell what he says. He says it so quickly, but that's how he started each of his broadcasts. And he also spoke in this, like, super rapid, like, staccatoed voice. So there was just, like, this sense of importance and, like,
urgency.
Yeah, everything's, like, so pressing. So his broadcasts are kind of crazy to listen to.
What, where, when, why, from the man America listens to most, Walter Winchell.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North and South American. All the ships at sea, let's go to press. The North Pole. The seven American airmen who crash-landed 350 miles near the pole last Thursday have been rescued. Little Rock, Arkansas. Six states hit by tornadoes over the weekend counted 28 dead and 200 injured. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The two-week walkout by the coal miners, which ends at midnight tonight, cost them over $55 million in salaries. Baltimore. Airplane manufacturer Glenn L. Martin reported today that his firm suffered a net loss of over $16 million last year. New York City. The funeral services for Jack Capp, 47, president of Decca Records, will be held tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. at 87th Street and Park Avenue. Greenwich, Connecticut. It's a baby girl for the Burt Parks at Greenwich Hospital. He's the MC on Stop the Music. Congratulations. New York City. It's a baby boy for the Judge Irving L. Levy's of the Supreme Court. Doctor's Hospital, New York. Mrs. Levy is the former Emily Wilkins, the fashion creator. Baltimore. The Tommy Dorseys just telephoned that they will be free late in 49. Mrs. Tommy Dorsey is the former Janie New off the Broadway stage.
By the 1930s, Winchell was really good friends with and well connected in the mafia community.
Okay.
He was a very close friend of a mobster named Oney Madden, who was New York's number one gang leader during this Prohibition era. Mm-hmm. Oney's nickname was the Killer. Oh. What would your gangster nickname be?
Nothing left to imagination there.
No, just the Killer.
Oh God, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm gonna be the snacker.
The snacker?
I either have snacks, am eating snacks, or am in progress to go get snacks.
Mm-hmm.
Yours would be...
I don't even know.
Yours would be something to do with dogs.
Dogs are like, I feel like it could be something like sweet or like, I could trick you.
The trickster.
The trickster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so in 1932, Winchell decided that all of these connections he had and the friendships he had with people in the mob and the mafia were dangerous, and he needed to, like, cut ties with these people. So he fled from New York to California, came back about a month or so later, and was kind of this reformed guy with this newfound love of government and law.
And you got that in California.
Yeah, apparently you just go to California for a couple weeks and you're like, oh, now I'm all about America and following the justice system, I guess.
Okay.
Sure. He ended up receiving national attention for his coverage of the Lindbergh kidnapping and trial.
Okay.
Is Lindbergh an episode? Is Lindbergh in the song?
No.
He's not?
I don't think
so. Oh, wait. Well, I guess the song starts in 1949. Huh. Mm. Okay. Anyway, the Lindbergh kidnapping and trial is, like,
it was
too
huge.
Real. Do you know anything about it?
The baby, right?
The baby. Yeah. Ugh. Nope, can't go there. Okay. So, Winchell befriends J. Edgar Hoover, who's, like, you know, this
huge they mean?
Man.
Like, they just, like...
Like, hey, let's just be friends.
Yeah.
Who is, you know, huge into the repeal era and was responsible... Okay, so... Winchell was responsible for turning over the mobster Louis Lepke Buchalter of the gang Murderer, Inc. And he turned him over to Hoover. And I think Buchalter, I could be wrong, but he was one of the last mobsters who was executed for his crimes. Not just, like, sentenced to jail time, but was actually, like, sentenced to death.
Oh, boy.
So... Winchell became this, like, friend of mobsters to this person who's turning them in. His newspaper column became syndicated and was in over 2,000 newspapers worldwide. And he was read by about 50 million people every day from the 1920s until the 1960s. So
oh, wow.
He was a hugely popular journalist at the time.
Wow. That's a long time.
Right. For almost 40
years.
Yeah. His Sunday night radio broadcast was heard by another 20 million people from about 1930 to the late 1950s. So people are reading his articles, they're listening to him on the radio every week. He's all over the place. In 1948, he had become like the number one top rated radio show in the nation. The song, The Lady is a Tramp.
Yeah.
It's Frank Sinatra is probably, like, most known for it. It was written by Richard Rodgers and Lorenz Hart. There's a line that says, she follows Winchell and she reads every line.
Oh.
So I was listening to a few different versions of the song. I listened to the Tony Bennett Lady Gaga version.
Yes.
They changed the lyric, though,
oh.
to say, she follows Rogers and Hart. I sing every line. So instead of, they replaced Winchell with the singers of the song. But
I suppose, I mean, it's so much time has passed, like it doesn't seem as relevant, and they wanted to be different, but aw.
Yeah.
Gaga.
Oh, Gaga.
That's why the lady is a tramp.
Oh, yeah. I go to Coney.
The beach is divine.
I root for the Dodgers.
Yeah. The bleachers are fine.
Still fall with sugar.
And she reads every line.
That's why the lady is a tramp. I like the price fight.
He's had a lot of outspoken views.
As
including
a journalist
as a journalist might do. As a Jewish person, he was one of the first to comment publicly against Adolf Hitler and kind of against these fascist and pro-Nazi organizations in the United States. This was even before, you know, obviously World War II started. This was in the 30s. He was a big supporter of FDR, as was popular at the time. Like, you know, a lot of people liked FDR when he was president. And he kind of served as the administration's mouthpiece during the 30s. In the 1930s and 1940s, Winchell was outspoken about supporting civil rights for African Americans and often attacked the Ku Klux Klan and other racist groups.
Good.
Which was good.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's something that every journalist was doing at the time. After World War II, Winchell began to denounce communism as the main threat facing America. And in the 1950s, he supported Senator Joseph McCarthy in his quest to identify communists. Especially in the entertainment industry. Do you remember learning about that in social studies in high school and stuff? Yeah. McCarthyism.
Yeah.
So, Winchell faced some backlash because McCarthy was not popular among people, and especially, obviously, people in the entertainment industry. So, Winchell kind of went from this super popular guy to all of a sudden being part of this anti-communist witch hunt.
Oh.
And this affects his career. In 1955, his weekly radio broadcast ended because of a dispute between himself and the ABC executives. He starred in The Walter Winchell File, a television crime drama that aired from 57 to 58, that would do dramatic reenactments, basically, of New York City Police Department. And then that had been covered in the Daily Mirror, the newspaper.
Okay.
ABC ended up rehiring him in 1959 to narrate The Untouchables for four seasons, which ironically is like a show about the mob.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy the connections that he has. In 1960... he signed with NBC to host a variety program called The Walter Winchell Show, which was canceled after only 13 weeks. Yikes. Because of what ended up happening, Ed Sullivan's show was on at this basically like the same time, and the format was the same, and so Ed Sullivan just was more popular.
Yeah.
And was for decades. Yeah, so... he basically lost out in a popularity contest between him and Ed Sullivan. And I think part of it probably had to do with his relationship with McCarthy. People were like, well, you know, in the entertainment industry, like, we don't want to be your friend. You were, like, trying to oust people for being communists.
Right.
When they weren't. And Ed Sullivan's more likable. So basically, his talents didn't transfer over from print and radio to television.
Gotcha.
He just didn't. His personality and everything. In the early 1960s, there was a really big public dispute between him and Jack Parr, who also hosted a television show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That basically ended up ending his career.
Oh.
Winchell had angered Parr a few years earlier because Winchell refused to retract a statement alleging that Parr was having marital difficulties. So he, like, started a rumor.
Winchell did. Gossiping.
Which is what he did. Like, he had a gossip column, and he often gossiped. And Parr did not let it go. So Parr ended up saying that Walter's column was, quote, written by a fly, and that his voice was so high because he wears too tight underwear. And said that Winchell had a hole in his soul.
Oh.
So Jack Parr was not a fan.
No.
Mm-mm.
And I'm sure he had a pretty loyal following, too.
Yeah. And Winchell was known for this gossip, and so I think it gave Parr the upper hand.
Yeah.
And Parr also called him a silly old man. And no one had previously really openly criticized Winchell. But basically after his reputation had already taken these hits between, like, his failed television show and people not liking him because of association with McCarthy, his career basically ended. So he went from being, like, the most popular journalist and radio personality to ending his career almost a decade later. And by 1963, his readership in newspapers basically ended. Mm. And he faded from the public. For a lot of his career, his radio and newspaper employers required them to hold him harmless from any damages resulting from lawsuits for slander or libel. Basically, because so much of the news he reported on, like, real factual evidence-based news, but he also did a lot of gossip, and so they basically had to keep him safe from lawsuits because of all the things that he said.
Right. And I'm sure back then, like, you could say a lot less and have so much more of an impact, whereas now it's just like...
Right. Especially if you can think about the fact that, like, the most damaging thing said about him was that he wore too tight underwear.
Right.
And that...
You're an old man.
You're a silly old man, and your column is written by a fly. Like, that was the most damaging thing someone could say about you.
Yeah.
That makes me think of one of my favorite movies is, oh my god, oh my brain. Oh my god, what's the movie with Jimmy Stewart? It's a Christmas movie. It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, in the movie It's a Wonderful Life, originally in the script, it had someone calling someone else a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And the group in charge of ratings and everything, except there weren't ratings, but the group in charge of censorship was like, you cannot call someone a jerk in a movie. That's so inappropriate.
Yeah.
Isn't that hilarious?
Times have changed.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Just slightly.
Just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Winchell would publish material oftentimes told to him in confidence by friends.
Oh boy.
So someone would be like, hey, you know, I've got this secret thing going on, or, like, I'm having an affair, or, like, my friend is doing this illegal thing, but, like, don't tell anybody. And then, of course, he would publish it.
Right.
And then his friends would get really upset. And his typical response was, I know, I'm just a son of a bitch. So he was often known for being kind of arrogant and cruel because of this.
Yeah.
That's just how he was.
But he found success for most of his life with it. So
It gave him a solid career for many decades. On just a side note, Marilyn Monroe was one of the attendees of his birthday in 1953.
Oh.
I was trying to find, like, some stories about him and if he reported on anybody. But anyway, she went to his birthday.
Nice.
So there you go. Was she married to Joe DiMaggio then?
53.
Joe DiMaggio comes up in a minute, so that's why I asked.
Oh, interesting.
As a result of Winchell's kind of, like, gossip style of columnist, he influenced other people like Ed Sullivan. So other people who we know of became famous because of his style. And Winchell was really known for, as we listened to earlier, he had this, like, slang and incomplete sentences and, like, this really quick sentence structure.
Yeah.
To kind of give a sense of urgency. He was once confronted by the mobster Dutch Schultz. at New York's Cotton Club for calling him a pushover.
Oh, man.
For his penchant for blonde women. So, you know, fighting words. He had a ghostwriter by the name of Herman Clerfeld. He worked for him for about 29 years, and he wrote a lot of his signature one-liners, including something called Lasties. That he would do, like, at the end of his broadcast, like, Lasties.
We should have a Lastie.
Oh, now we need a Lastie
now
segment.
Now we need a Lastie.
Okay, Lasties. And one line that Kerfeld wrote that was kind of infamous, I guess, was, "She's been on more laps than a napkin."
Oh my God.
Of all the things, I was like, thank you. Of all this gossip, give me something good. I don't recall exactly who that was written about, but yes. Woof. Oh, boy. In 1952, it was revealed that Clerfeld was Winchell's ghostwriter by the New York Post.
Oh, okay.
And Clerfeld ended up writing a biography about Winchell entitled Walter Winchell, His Life and Times, which was the basis for a movie that came out in 1998. I think it's a TV movie by HBO. I tried so damn hard to find this movie. I think you can order it by disc.
Oh, wow.
On Amazon, which I did not do because by the time I was doing this research, it was like never going to get to me. But it actually has a pretty impressive cast. Stanley Tucci plays Walter Winchell, which if you look at pictures of Winchell, is a pretty appropriate casting. Okay. Christopher Plummer plays FDR.
Okay.
And then Paul Giamatti plays like a friend of Winchell. Like maybe, I don't know if it's his ghostwriter. The movie is just called Winchell.
Winchell.
Huh. It's on, you can see the trailer and stuff online. It actually looks good. I would have totally liked to watch it, except I'm definitely not going to buy the disc on Amazon.
Yeah, maybe not. But, like, if I see it at Goodwill.
If something happens where you come into contact with this movie, I tried really hard. The internet let me down. I think I could have streamed it, like, illegally, but I couldn't even figure out how to.
Right. I wonder if we could get it from the movie, or the movie theater, the library.
Maybe. I'll check.
We'll see.
So, a little bit more about his personal life. In 1919, so when he was a younger man, he married a woman by the name of Rita Green. She was one of his, like, vaudeville onstage partners, so this was before his journalism career. They ended up separating, though, a few years later, and he moved in with a woman named Elizabeth June McGee. McGee had an adoptive daughter previously named Gloria, and she had already given birth to her and Winchell's first child before he was divorced from Rita.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Complicated.
A little complicated. A daughter by the name of Walda. Winchell and Green Winchell and Green were divorced in 1928, but Winchell never officially married Elizabeth.
Oh, okay.
They lived together.
Yeah.
They were just, I guess, never married officially. And so they had three children. Gloria, whom they both adopted, then Walda, and then a son, Walter Jr., and all of their children kind of had tragic lives.
Ugh.
Gloria died of pneumonia when she was 9.
Oh.
Walda spent time in and out of psychiatric hospitals. And then Walter Jr. Ended up committing suicide.
Oh.
On Christmas.
Oh! No.
I think he was in his 40s.
Oh, no.
Or 30s. I'm really sorry. Sorry. Winchell died of prostate cancer at the age of 74 on February 20th, which is another birthday of a friend of ours, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
At his funeral, apparently only his daughter attended, but it might have been because his daughter turned everyone else away. His daughter, Walda.
Oh, okay.
Turned everybody away. Of the people that showed up. I don't know. It seems like there was weirdness happening. I don't think he had a ton of friends at the end of his life.
Right. Which is so sad to
have. It's really sad.
Have had so much.
Right. He ended up spending the last 2 years of his life kind of as a hermit at the Ambassador Hotel in L.A. Larry King, who was still alive.
Yeah.
Replaced Winchell at the Miami Herald. So apparently, like, in the...
Okay. That's where he got his start.
Yeah. He replaced Winchell when he left. And Larry King once said he was so sad. You know what Winchell was doing at the end? Typing out mimeograph sheets on his column, handing them out on the corner. That's how sad he got when he died. Oh. Only one person came to his funeral, his daughter. So.
That's heartbreaking.
Right.
Like, I understand that maybe he wasn't, like...
the best
the
dude.
The best guy, but... Mm-hmm. Nobody deserves to be alone like that.
No,
in their old age and dying of pancreatic cancer, was it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Prostate cancer at 74.
Ugh. Yeah, nobody deserves to be alone, especially when they're hurting so badly.
No. So it sounds like the rest of his life was a little bit tragic. Back in 1946, the death of a close friend of his, another writer by the name of Damon Runyon, sparked Winchell to establish the Damon Runyon Cancer Memorial Fund, which raised a lot of charity for cancer. And with the support of many celebrities, including Marlene Dietrich, Bob Hope, Milton Berle, Marilyn Monroe, and Joe DiMaggio, until his death.
Was in the 50s?
He started it in 46.
Oh, okay.
And then, I don't know if the foundation is still around or not, but basically he raised money from 46 until the end of his life. Mm-hmm. But I think in the height of his popularity, obviously he was raising more money.
Right.
Which is why I asked if Marilyn was married to Joe DiMaggio in 53.
I don't think that they were. I think they were together, but okay. I don't think they were married yet.
Got
but it.
It
would make sense, like, why they were both, like,
at a
mentioned
party, maybe
and together.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't think that they got married until, like, a year or so later.
Gotcha. Winchell is credited for coining the word frenemy.
Way back then,
in 1953. So if you've ever used the word frenemy, you can thank Walter Winchell.
Oh.
There's a little gem. The novel, Stranger in a Strange Land, which I think is an episode. Okay.
Yes.
In 1961, in the novel, Stranger in a Strange Land, the author Robert Heinlein introduced the term Winchell as a term for a politically intrusive gossip columnist. So... while Winchell was popular, this author was using Winchell as like a
verb?
A noun?
Okay.
Like someone, if you're a Winchell, you're like a gossip columnist.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
So that'll be, we'll have to, future episode. Such a Winchell. I have a really short Where Those Ladies At segment.
Yeah.
Do you know who Josephine Baker is? You'd recognize her.
Yeah. It sounds familiar.
She was like a famous dancer, entertainer.
Okay.
In 1951, she criticized the Stork Club's policy of discouraging black patrons. And she had a strict policy of not performing in front of segregated audiences. She was black. So she was like, I'm not going to perform at these racist clubs.
Yeah.
This is rude as hell.
Yeah.
And she ended up scolding Winchell because he was an ally of hers, but he didn't rise to her defense. And she was kind of like, dude, like, you're my friend. What do you...
And you have this voice. Okay,
yeah, like, you have this power. Like, why aren't you backing me up? I'm right. And especially when he was someone who, especially early in his career, kind of like... stood up for civil rights and spoke out against KKK. Like, why aren't you standing up for me?
Right. Yeah.
And then, not only did he not stand up for her, he basically accused her of communist sympathies, which was a serious, serious charge at the time. It wasn't just like kind of how today, how people can accuse people.
You don't just throw that accusation
around. It resulted in the termination of her work visa, and she had to go to France. She had to go back to France. And she was there for 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
Before she was allowed back into the country. So, thanks, Winchell.
Just to be kind of a jerk.
Mm-hmm. I think ultimately, though, Winchell came out of that situation also looking badly. People were not like...
Yeah.
He looked like a jerk. Because he kind of was there.
Because he was.
He was there. But Josephine Baker is another woman who... I feel like we could do an episode on her. She's so beautiful. I watched some videos of her. She was not a singer. She was more of a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
But gosh, she was really... She was a ballsy lady and mm-hmm. she looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So honestly, Winchell, he did kind of start some fires. He's kind of a pot stirrer.
Oh, for sure. He seems like a pot stirrer.
Mm-hmm. Starting little fires.
Mm-hmm. Or fueling them.
Fueling the fires.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Walter.
Walter. All right. Lasties.
Lasties.
I don't have one. Lasties. Say hi to your frenemies. Beep, 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 beep,